Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 18 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levesey, and discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. Well, for the first time since joining the show, Matt Summer and I go tag team as we discuss this past weekend's Baltimore Comic Con. We also go Marvel A through Z, give our thoughts on the Harvey Award winners, and touch on Marvel's latest announcements. The big question, will Joss Whedon write more than 2 issues of Runaways a year? I certainly hope so. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 18 of Comic Timing. We are 2 away from the big 2-0 now, and this is going to be kind of a laid-back episode with just myself and the usual partner, Matt S., on today's episode. First of all, Matt, how are you?
Doing all right, my friend. Doing all right.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Now, what we're going to be going over today is sort of my wrap-up for Baltimore Comic Con, which I had the pleasure of going to on Saturday and Sunday of this past week. And we're also going to be taking a look at some of the announcements that came out the day after Baltimore Comic Con at the Diamond event that was held on Monday, which were then brought up on Newsarama.com with a very interesting game, and interesting as in I really saw no point to it, but we'll get into that later on. But first of all, Baltimore Comic Con, just to sort of do a quick review of that here, it was very, very small. That's probably the best way to put it. I mean, usually at most conventions, I mean, comparing this to something like New York Comic Con or even like Wizard World Chicago, there's really no comparison to be made. Baltimore Comic Con is a very friendly con. It's a very intimate con where the aisles are huge. There's not too many people walking down the aisles at once. There's only about maybe 4 or 5 panels per day. And it's only a 2-day con as opposed to a 3-day con, so you don't have nearly as much foot traffic as you would have at one of the other conventions. I mean, I had a really good time, but also it was very, very different. I mean, when you were at Wizard World Chicago, Matt, I mean, how crowded was it on a regular basis?
I'm probably like a bad person to ask about comparisons because I've only ever really been to Wizard World Chicago. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to any of the other cons. I live pretty close to Chicago, and aside from that, there's really not much else other than the Motor City Con, I guess, but still, yep. That's a good 8-10 hours away. You know, I don't know, Chicago Con this year, pretty damn packed, it seemed like. I think that space they have there is probably smaller than it should be. The aisles are pretty crowded, and they sort of have it organized in a weird way, where the where you come in is where like all the company's booths are. So you get your Marvel and DC booth, and for some reason they have this ungodly gigantic ass Spike TV booth, and then there was all the dealers in the middle, and then at the very far end of the hall was the small press and the artist alley. And it was pretty crowded. I mean, it was constantly bumping into people all the time.
So, in other words, because of the layout itself, it was a bit hard to maneuver.
I don't know if that was why or not, but it's pretty, it just seemed crowded in there for whatever reason. You get that nice con smell and all that stuff, so it was pretty crowded.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the complete opposite of my experience that I had here. I came in on Friday to catch a Yankee game because, well, quite frankly, I'm a Yankee fan and they were in town and I'd never been to Camden Yards, and that was one heck of an experience. Of course, I picked the one game where the Yankees actually lost, but
yeah,
exactly.
So you got to go up in the skybox and hang out with Jeppy, right?
Oh, yeah, right, sure, exactly. That's totally what I ended up doing. No, actually, I had some decent seats downstairs in Section 67, which is over on the left field side, and had a great time over there. And I stayed an hour out. I have learned my lesson. I am never doing that again.
Yeah, what was the point of that again?
Just out of college and all that, I really didn't have much money to spare, and I figured, you know, why not go on to Priceline.com and get something that's actually on the light rail, right, that I'd be able to do, not realizing at the time that the light rail is a piece of crap, and it stops running at 11:30 every night, so, you know, there was no, like, con parties or anything like that to go to. Mind you, I wouldn't have been going to those anyway, but just had to make sure to get that last 11:30 or else we were kind of screwed, and we were stupid enough to take a cab out the first time, and that was a $50 cab ride right there.
That's your room, man. You could just save that money on the pay that towards your hotel. And
we've learned our lesson. Let's put it that way.
I was going to say, that's the one thing about when we were at Chicago, when I was lovely, you know, sharing the same bed with the lovely David Price. We had, a hotel room just right there in the Hyatt, and, it was like a very easy walk. So I think that's key, especially if you're going to stay overnight. You definitely want to be close as possible.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I hope David laid off the footsie for that one night.
Well, yeah, he was a gentleman. But anyway,
yeah.
But yeah, that's cool. So you're down there. Were you down there with your girlfriend, or who were you down there with?
Yeah, I went down there with my girlfriend. We took the Greyhound down on Friday, and a much better trip down than on the way back, because we got a straight trip from New York to Baltimore going down there. It took us 3 hours, that's it, which was amazing, because it's not supposed to take 3 hours to get there. No traffic whatsoever, absolutely gorgeous weather all weekend long, and, once we got down there. Also, the one thing you got to know about Baltimore, the bus depot is in the middle of nowhere, so you have to take a cab at least over to the convention area to get on a train or get on a bus or wherever you need to go, because literally the tumbleweed was going by.
Nice.
I have no idea why they put this thing here at all, because it's completely out of the way. All it is giving the cabs money, which might have been why they did it in the first place.
Yeah, it's sort of the same thing. I mean, that's kind of the, and I don't know where the convention center was in relation to the actual downtown.
It was in the heart of downtown.
Okay, well, that's cool. The one thing that really sucks about the Wizard World Chicago is that it's located in the Rosemont Convention Center, which is not really Chicago. I mean, it's Chicago adjacent, as they say. We didn't ever even really go anywhere outside of our hotel, but it's, if you want to go downtown, you got to get a cab, get on the bus or whatever you got to do, try to figure out how to get down there.
Yeah, well, that's what we had to do to actually get to where we were going to be at the convention. But, I mean, the room was nice, at least that much we had going for it. We stayed at a Courtyard by Marriott, which, mind you, is not nearly as nice as a Marriott, but it's still, it had a bed and a TV and Wi-Fi access, which is all we really needed. So I was able to still, check out the forums, and we just sat down and watched DVDs when we were in our room and all that, and life was good. Also, I have found a restaurant that I am now going to have to track down. For any of you who have ever been to a Damon's Grill, go to a Damon's Grill again, because it is the most delicious place I've ever been to, dude. All right? You ever had an onion loaf?
I have never heard of such a place.
Well,
I've never heard of an onion loaf.
What it is pretty much, how Outback has the Awesome Blossom with all that sort of thing?
Sure.
Yeah, and this one is pretty much the same sort of thing, only it's onions on top of onions on top of onions on top of onions, which you then peel off and dip in some sauce. It was like, oh, my God. Dude, that's heaven. That's heaven in an onion right there, man.
Oh, man. And this is even before we get to the con, man. If the
this
onion's
is
that
even
good.
Before the con. Exactly. Yeah, this was
I
on Friday night.
I can only imagine how great the con was. So, let's talk about that now.
Man.
I'm looking at the guest list here for the show.
Yeah.
A couple of big names. Perez, Romita Sr., Matt Wagner, Mark Wade, Marv Wolfman was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Did you see or go to any panels with any of these guys, or what'd you get up to?
Well, see, laziness played into the factor for me. I had an opportunity to go to the Wolfman Perez panel, which actually took place on, I believe it was, yeah, here we go. It took place at 2-3 on Saturday. But because of us, we were completely sleep deprived Friday coming into Saturday, so we slept in. And I actually didn't get to the con until about, I guess it was about 2:00, really. And
Jesus, man.
Exactly, I know, yeah. So when we got to the con, though, I mean, it was actually really nice. And we walked around for a little bit. We went into the dollar bins and raided there. And then we went to the one-year greater panel for DC at 3:00. And that was the first panel that I ended up going to that day. And there were a decent amount of people there. I mean, George Perez was there, Mark Wade, Kurt Busiek, J.G. Jones, Jimmy Palmiotti, Bill Willingham, and also Barry Kitson was there, which actually was not, he was originally not listed as one of the people for that panel, but he actually did end up there. And, they basically just went back and forth. It wasn't really much about 1 year later, to tell you the truth. It was more about, these guys are awesome, let's ask some questions. And, that's always fun, but I sort of expected there to be a little more news announced at 1 year greater, but there really wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, same thing with Wizard World Chicago. I mean, DC really didn't put out a whole lot of announcements. I think we're kind of at the point where if it's not San Diego, it's just not that important.
Yeah.
For a lot of these announcements. Based on what you're telling me, though, from that it's a smaller show, it's still You know, the guest list I'm seeing here seems like it's rivaling what we had in Chicago. We had a pretty weak turnout for guests this year at the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, well, that was the thing. I mean, compared to the amount of people that were actually at the convention, there were probably actually more guests at the convention than there were people when you think about it. I mean, you know, like all the that might very well be one of the reasons why the creators actually enjoy going to this, because it is more of an intimate atmosphere. You know, you can actually, you know, you can have conversations with people. I mean, Dan Slott was loving it. Let's put it that way. I mean, everybody coming up to him and, you know, congratulating him on a job well done, on a couple of books that he's done. And literally, at one point, Tom Brevoort had to literally drag him out of the panel. That's how happy Dan Slott was, because he was just having this conversation. And Tom gets on the mic and goes, "Dan Slott, please leave the premises immediately. We're going to get kicked out."
Man, I'm surprised those two guys actually can be civil to each other after what happened to his comments about Slott being late on every single thing he's ever done.
Well, I guess. Well, Slott's got a nice personality. He very easily forgives people, I guess. Because, yeah, quite frankly, if I was him, I wouldn't be too happy about that. Let's put it that way.
I guess you don't have much choice, but
yeah,
He's. I guess you're signed to exclusive, right? What can you do?
Exactly, yeah. And also, Slott and Brevoort were the guys behind the Marvel Trivia Contest, which I went to at 5 that day. And that was a lot of fun. That was probably one of my most fun experiences at the entire convention, quite frankly, because everybody got the first round right, because it was literally follow the leader. If one person had an idea for it, they sort of did if you know, A is on this side of the room, B's on that side of the room, C's on this side of the room, and it just went from there. And that first part was kind of easy. The second part was a bit more difficult, because they then did Marvel A through Z. And you don't realize how difficult it is to think of a Marvel character until you're asked to go A through Z. And Justice from the Comic ESP forums was also there. And also, yeah, I think he was actually really the only one that was there. We didn't actually realize that we were both at the same panel at the same time, but he was asked a question, he got it wrong. I was asked a question later on, I got it wrong. I spelled Mjolnir wrong. And
spelled what wrong?
Mjolnir, Thor's hammer.
Mjolnir. How's that?
There you go. I added an I before the N and screwed up. And because of that, I lost a Marvel Showcase Punisher, and there was one other trade on there that I didn't get a chance to get because of that. But I did win a couple things at the panel. I won a free copy of Wolverine Origins #1 with the Michael Turner cover. And I got a trade paperback of one of the latest runs on New X-Men. I believe it was volume 3. And
well, anything free is good. So what do you say you and I try to throw down with some of this Marvel A to Z action?
Oh, boy. Yeah, this is going to be difficult. All right, fine. let's start it off with A. And also, they did let teams go. And by the way, this is something that I will never forget, okay? I got Q at one point, and I was blank. I had no idea what the hell to do. Somebody had already mentioned Quicksilver, and you couldn't mention the same person twice.
Oh, okay.
So literally, the word just comes out of my mouth, Quiver, and Tom Brevoort's looking at me like, and then somebody in the crowd raises his hand and goes, "He was a member of X-Men 2099! And I got saved.
Whew.
I got saved. Exactly. Because nice. Of that, I ended up still a part of it. And I was like, dude, thank you. I gave him a high five as I walked by, and wow, man. But okay, fine. Let's get going on this a little bit. I guess we'll start it off with you at A.
Well, so we both have to do the same letter? Is that how it goes?
No. It was basically A through Z, you know, like randomly A, B, C, D.
So
we'll just go through like maybe H or something like that, because if we do the entire alphabet, it'll be forever.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, so any character?
Any character that matches the letter of that term. So I'll go A for you.
Okay, so Abomination.
All right, there we go. And now I would be B, I guess. Boston Brand. Oh, never mind, wrong one. That's DC, silly.
You lost already. Okay, that was
exactly
quick.
Right. I know. Yeah. well, that was only a part joke. Let's put it that way. B. Again, you don't realize how difficult this is. B would be crap. What the hell, man? This is ridiculous. Who would you say is B? Because man,
Beast?
Like, there you go. What the hell? Holy crap! I'm out of it, man. B would be B. C, you know, all, and the best thing was also with C. about 80 different captains mentioned, because there's that seems to be the thing with Marvel. There's so many captains that you could just keep going with captain for the entire run.
True. I was going to go with Cannonball, actually, but...
Ooh, that works. Okay.
That's a good one.
D Daredevil.
Okay. Electro.
Okay. F... Oh, Fing Fang Foom. G. G.
Goliath.
Oh, there you go. That works. H, Hawkeye.
Okay. Oh...
Let's see if we can get through the entire alphabet. We'll just do it once. You can see right through her.
Invisible Woman. All right, there we go. And no helping.
Okay. J, Justice.
Okay.
K. You're
Kickers,
up to K.
Inc.
Ooh!
Eat that.
Oh, my God. Holy crap. L. L. Son of a bitch, L. damn it, I just had something in my head and it just completely went out. L. Blah, 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 blah. All right, this would be my stumper point. Do you have an L?
Oh, man. I knew you were going to ask me that. Let's see.
wait, Lumpkin.
Willie Lumpkin. Okay. Yeah, Lumpkin, Willy comma, Lumpkin. Willie. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Lumpkin, comma, Willie. All right, M.
Man-Thing.
Oh, there you go. N, Namor.
Okay, O. I think there was a guy named Osprey, wasn't there?
That'll work. I was thinking Daruski, Omega Red.
No, there you go.
Yeah.
I might be thinking of a DC guy, I can't remember, but I think he might have been in, whatever, keep going.
P, Power Man.
Okay.
Q.
Now, see, now you screwed me. Well, we already set a couple of them up.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Quicksilver.
There you go. Take the easy way out. let's see. R. Ringmaster.
All right. Nice. S. Let's see. I'm obviously skipping the easy ones here. I'm trying to pick
one
better
course.
Than... Spider-Man, but no, I'll go with that, I guess.
dude, I'm surprised you didn't go Liefeld. Shatterstar, man.
No.
T. Okay, no, I'm not going to go that easy. Okay, T would be Thing.
All right.
You.
Wasn't there... There's one of those, like, one of those guys that was, like, the UFOs. There you go.
There you go. Beautiful. I also would have accepted Uatu, the Watcher.
Oh, man.
Let's see. V. Valeria. which, of course, is the daughter of Reed and Sue.
Okay.
W.
Well, you just gave me one, like, two letters ago that I will try not to use, but let's see.
Okay.
Screw it, the Watcher. Okay, there you go.
I wonder, man, what you were trying to do. Seriously.
Oh, Zing.
Zing, X-23.
Okay.
Why? Why is the most... Y and Z are the most difficult ones.
Yellow Jacket, there you go.
There you go. Okay, and Z? Holy crap. This is probably the most difficult one, because there's like maybe two characters that start with Z in the entire Marvel Universe. Crap. All right, if you could think of one, give me one, man, because this is totally not going to come easy for me. Here, let's see. I might actually cheat.
No, there's some electricity-looking guy that I think his name is like Zizix or something like that.
Oh, yeah, Zax. Zax.
I don't know if that's how you spell it or whatever, but I remember that from the...
That was actually one of the questions at the panel. How do you spell Zax? It's Z-Z-Z-A-X.
Oh, see, there you go.
I don't know why they bothered to name him that way, but yeah. there we go. We actually did A through Z halfway decently. But
not bad.
Yeah, that's like, and honestly, that was more fun than I thought it was going to be, because we sat down there to eat lunch, and we were told immediately by Tom Brevoort, if you're here to just sit down, this is not the panel for you. Because we're moving around the room and all that at first and all that, but once we were done, then on to the fun we went. But after we were done with that, we went downstairs and went through the dollar bins even more. And wow, I experienced the joy of dollar bins a lot at this con, man.
All right, well, let's break down the swag here. What'd you come home with?
I've been following Girls by the Luna Brothers, okay, which is an Image comic book, and Midtown Comics is the biggest ripoff when it comes to back issues, because they jack up the price immediately after it's a back issue. Like a month later, it's at least 50 cents more than it should be. So I picked up issues 14 and 15 of Girls in the dollar bin, which was actually not too bad, because this literally just came out like 2 months ago, and I was able to find it there. I got issues, 7, 9, 10, 11, and 12 of DC's Fallen Angel, Peter David's book, which is now with IDW. So I actually need to still get issue 8, but I couldn't find that anywhere at the con. My girlfriend got Stanley and His Monster number 2.
All right. Never heard of that one.
Well, Stanley and His Monster actually showed up in Kevin Smith's run of Green Arrow, Once Upon a Time.
Okay.
And he actually had a Stanley and His Monster series. It's sort of like a humor series back in the 80s, and actually early 90s, 93 I think it was. And she had been missing that for years and finally found it in the 50 cent bin, actually, and picked it up over there. And I got my first Marvel Legends figure. I couldn't resist this. I got Ultron.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was right away I saw it, and I'm like, okay, there's no way I'm leaving here without this. And it was just... It is so detailed. It's one of the best looking figures in the bunch, in my opinion. And I left there with that. I got issues, I think it was like issues 1, 3, 8, and 16 of Manhunter, because I'm trying to slowly get the back issues of that. And I'm glad I got issue 1, because that was only $1, and I've seen that for like $4 bucks in some places.
Well,
but
that's that's a series that basically has pretty low print runs, so I would imagine that if the buzz ever catches on totally with that series, that might be a good investment.
Pick up issue number 26. That's all I'm saying. Pick up issue number 26 come September. It's supposed to start off a new arc that's supposed to be really big in the DC universe. Manhunter is really, really good. You got to be reading that book. I'm glad I finally caught on the Manhunter train, thanks to, in mostly part, due to the Comic Geek Speak guys around comics, Raging Bullets, the list goes on and on of how many people who have sung praise to this. So.
You know, it's weird because I've been a DC fan pretty much since Crisis in 85, and that's like one... I know it's totally, it's sort of related, but mostly not related, that DC's trotted out those Manhunter things, like, about once every decade.
Yeah.
And they're always just horrible, like, cheesy, those, like, stupid red guys with the white faces.
Yeah.
For a while, they were basically just like the Omax for a while, where they would just, a whole bunch of them come out. I don't know. I haven't even given that new series a shot because of those bad lingering memories.
Well,
but
it's really, really well done, honestly. So, I mean, if you could find it in the back issue bins at a con, say, a year from now or something like that, I'd highly recommend actually picking it up because you will not be disappointed.
Well, I will take your word for that.
Excellente. And also, I ended up at one point, I got a sketch at the con because I think my rule is I'm going to get one sketch per con because at New York Comic Con, I got a Todd Knock sketch of Kid Flash that was incredibly well done. It was a headshot, basically. It had a little bit of the torso there, but that was just $20, and I couldn't resist that.
And Ian, now it's obsolete.
Yeah, I know.
That sketch has been proved to be out of continuity now in DC.
Motherfucker.
So who did you corral it in Baltimore?
Well, I actually got the art team of Nick Clark and Zach Russell, who are doing a brand new comic called Toxic Shock Comics. Exactly. Actually, issue 1 literally just came out at the Baltimore Comic Con. So I saw their art. I saw that they were associated with Jim Mahfood in at least one fashion. And I immediately got drawn to them and said, all right, fine, what the hell, I'll give it a shot. And they drew me a Superboy that was actually literally the first time they had ever drawn Superboy.
Cool, the Infinite Crisis, like, I'm a maniacal maniac Superboy.
Oh, hell no, dude. No, no, no. No, this was jeans and t-shirt, Tonel Superboy. And I'm trying to piece together at least the beginning of the Teen Titans.
Sounds like you're trying for a Titans run there.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey.
Yeah, only 10 more to go.
Exactly. And then I spent all day on, I think it was actually on Tuesday. Yeah, literally. Yeah, it was just yesterday. I woke up, and basically the minute that I woke up, I was like, you know what the hell? I'll color this in. So you can find it on the Comic Geek Speak forums on one of the past posts. I'll probably post it on the Comic Timing forums also. I did a Photoshop job of Superboy. I colored him in, and I added a background to it. I know it's a piece of crap because I suck at art, but it's colored in, and it looks halfway decent. So I posted it up on there.
Well, as long as you stayed within the lines. Ian, that's all
yeah,
that
close enough. I came close enough. That's what matters. I got to work on my shading. That's the problem. But
so do you see? I mean, do you see any of these other guys? Do you talk to any of these other guys there? Because we were, you know, we had a big thing in Chicago. We were talking to John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I like it'd be kind of interesting to see what his old man would have to say.
Yeah, see, I almost had an opportunity, and there were so many people around him that I sort of passed on it. Like, chances are I'll probably talk to, and this is kind of weird to say, but usually when there's more people at a convention, I tend to talk to more creators. When there's less people at a convention, I'm realizing that I'd much rather just walk around and buy stuff.
Well, that seems rather counterintuitive, but I'll,
exactly.
I'll
well,
give it
there's
to
there's
you.
Less there's less fighting. Let's put it that way. There's less crowd and more chance of actually finding back issues that you want.
That's true. I could not go into those dollar a quarter boxes when I was in Chicago because therein lies madness, my friend. You dive in and you will never come out.
I
stuck to the 50% off trades boxes, and even that took me like a good couple of hours to sort myself through.
Oh yeah. Yeah, my girlfriend ended up with the trade of the Celestial Madonna arc of Avengers, and that was back when you know there was still Buscema art on it and a couple other things involved with it. And I've always wanted to read that particular story arc, so to say the least, I'll probably end up mooching it off of her after she's done. But she got that, and she ended up getting also issues. I think she actually got the first 12 issues of Alan Davis's Excalibur, which is yeah.
You have a girl with some eclectic tastes there.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Well, hey, that's always been pretty well toted from what I found with the Claremont Davis run on Excalibur, and then Warren Ellis sort of revived it a couple of years later. But like those early issues are supposed to be pretty decent, and then from there she ended up with a couple other random things along the line. Oh, there was one issue with Fables. I think it was issue 38 that she was looking to try and complete her run on Fables, and she got that. And I got Horrorwood number one because I've been hearing great things about that from Ape Entertainment, the same guys who do Athena Voltaire. And
many other great books, just Black Coat and
exactly.
Some other things I can't remember. Yeah, we shared a hotel room with some of those guys for a while in Chicago.
That's cool. Yeah, actually, Steve, I'm going to be getting in contact with him sometime this week about possibly having a guest spot here on Comic Timing, as Damien has talked to him recently, so he seems to be up for it, so we'll try and work something
out.
He
was a gregarious type of fellow. I met him in Chicago, so he's quite pleasant.
Gregarious. I like the vocabulary there.
He's like a big, like, I'm trying to say, I don't know how to say this. He seems like a real positive, kind of go-gettery type of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's a firm handshake and a look in the eye, and he's going to sell you on that Athena Voltaire book, man.
Well, that's good. Now, the Baltimore Convention Center also, it's split up into two parts. Now, there was one convention happening with dudes in funny ties and stuff. And I have no
funny
idea who
tie
it was.
Convention, okay.
Exactly, apparently, because they were all wearing like purple ties and like blue suits or something. It was really, really odd. I'm assuming that was just for the sake of actually looking the same, or maybe
the
company's colors or something.
The Moonies convention.
Oh, there you go. That makes a lot of sense. But no, well, this was in the second part of the convention. And I got to tell you, the convention hall, on the inside, it looks really, really nice. But actually walking through it on the outside is really a pain in the ass, because it's laid out terribly on the outside. They got to work on that. Especially, like, if I was going to Otakon, and Otakon uses actually the entire space of the convention center. It uses both sides of it. Baltimore Comic Con was more localized. The room that they used for their comic books and all that, the main dealer's room, is actually, I think, actually one of the viewing spaces for Otakon, just to give you an idea of how huge Otakon can be. So, not much, like, you know, in comparison there, but this was at least one space of the Baltimore Convention Center. And the space that they used was actually really nice, and they had the panels up on the third floor, and they were in a very nice panel rooms with a whole bunch of seats and laid out very, very nicely. And I went to a Paul Pope panel for a little bit on Sunday until I realized he was going to be talking art, and actually, like, art. Not just
no Batman talk.
Yeah, exactly. Like this wasn't him talking about his books. This was him talking about like art styles and all that, which is, you know, interesting to some, but to others is just not their cup of tea. To me, it wasn't really my cup of tea. And
man,
that was
I'm still waiting for that collected THB one of these days from that guy. Now that he's having his little mini renaissance in the industry, they need to get that crap out there. That was how I was following his stuff in the 90s when I was getting kind of sick of the whole Image superhero garbage that was coming out at the time, and I pretty much went exclusive independent stuff for a couple of years, and he was a guy that I just kind of found on a shelf with the THB story, and I don't know if you've ever read it or seen any of those, but
I heard of it but haven't read it.
Some great, I think it's like one of the greatest stories that came out of the 90s independent stuff that I can remember.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see that one of these days. I mean, I have most of the original issues anyway, but I don't know where they are.
I'm sure you'll find them eventually.
They are lost. Well, most of my old long boxes, most of my comics are at my parents' house.
Oh.
So I do not have access to them.
Gotcha. Yeah. I also got Devil's Panties number one, by the way, before I forget to mention that, as Jenny Breeden was on Comic Timing once upon a time, and I had to support her for that, and I already had Con Artists, so I figured, what the hell, I'll pick up Devil's Panties number one, and she put a nice sketch on the inside, and she's a really, really nice person. Like, she's very vibrant, and always has a story to tell, and she is certainly worth supporting, so I picked that up there, and I'm trying to think if there was really anything else that I picked up at the con. I think that's it off the top of my head. There might be a couple others. Let's see here. Yeah, as I look at my Manhunter issues, I finally ended up with issue 3 of Manhunter, and then issue 13, issue 10, random issues here and there. So I did pick up issue 1, though. That's what matters. And then there was the Harvey Awards on Saturday night.
Yes. The Harvey Awards, named after Harvey the Rabbit. Really?
No, actually, not named after him. Surprisingly enough, actually, because you would think that you really would, but oh no, it's actually named after Harvey Kurtzman, the famous.
That's right, the famous artist from Mad Magazine and other such wonderful EC comics.
Yes, indeed.
That makes a lot more sense. Now, we were talking about this a little bit before the show because we were. I was looking at the award winners and the nominees and. I gotta say, some of these are a little cuckoo to me, man. I don't know. Some of these winners are seem a little strange, but maybe they don't seem that strange to other people. But let's go over the fact that, you know, basically how these awards are nominated. Now, from my painstaking research, I have
both of us aren't 100% certain on this.
Well,
so
this is coming from the Harvey Awards official website, harveyawards.org.
Yeah,
and under the history section, it says that the nominees, it says they are nominated by and selected by the full body of comic book professionals.
Okay.
Now, in contrast, I guess that they're trying to distinguish themselves from the Eisner Awards, because the Eisner Awards, basically, there's a five-person panel that makes the nominations, and then the wider industry professionals vote.
Okay, you know what it is, actually, now that I think about it? I think it was actually an open vote for writers and comic book professionals over the internet. Maybe that makes a little more sense.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how they do this, and I don't know who's a member. And this is kind of like the Academy Awards, where there's like this, you know, cabal of people who are involved that, you know, I don't really know who voted and who didn't vote and whatever. But
yeah,
as we're going through this, I want to kind of flip back and forth and talk about who won the Eisner and who won the Harvey and for these kind of similar categories,
okay,
and see how this breaks down.
Alrighty.
Now, I don't know if we want to go through every one of these or not, but how do you want to break this down here?
We could do about maybe like 3 at a time, something along those lines, just to sort of go through like maybe the major categories and see whether or not we had any qualms with the winner. Some of them I'd say here, like let's say best letterer for the Harveys was Chris Ware of Acme Novelty Library number 18. And Acme Novelty Library won a lot.
Yeah, that's kind of weird because, I don't know. I guess I don't pay that much attention to lettering. 2006 Eisner Award for the lettering went to Todd Klein.
Okay.
For Wonder Woman, Justice, Seven Soldiers, Desolation Jones, Promethea, Top 10, and some other stuff. So I really, you know, I have no way to comment on that. I mean, lettering's pretty much a personal taste, I guess.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about Best Colorist? I mean, Laura Martin for Astonishing X-Men. Mind you, you can't really go with the fact that the book is always late because it's, I don't think it's the colorist's fault that this book is always late. I think it's a combination of Joss Whedon and John Cassaday just taking their damn sweet time to get this out. I mean, Laura Martin's colors are very, very lush and vibrant and gorgeous on Astonishing X-Men, so I can certainly understand why they would pick her.
I mean, I have no problems with that. Again, I know we've gotten a lot of inside information on the coloring process over the last year or so on these various other podcasts and things. A lot of Marvel stuff to me has almost a bit of a house feel to it lately with really darker palettes. But, you know, again, I guess I don't have I don't have any problem with that, too, you know, in principle. I haven't, you know, no one else that specifically sticks out in my mind.
Well, who won for Best Colorist for the Eisners?
Speaking of strange choices, the Eisner 2006 award winner for Best Coloring was Chris Ware for Acme Novelty Library number 16.
Huh. Wow, so, there seems to be a pattern here.
You think? No, I haven't seen that particular issue. I have the Jimmy Corrigan hardcover collection, and while it's colored well and stylistically, I mean, the styles that they're having up here are so different as far as, you know, a full-on Marvel superhero comic coloring is a lot different than something like that to me, mind. So I don't know. It's almost like apples and oranges, I guess, to me. So, again, I suppose personal preference.
I guess, yeah. Best syndicated strip of panel was, I believe it's pronounced Mackey's by Tony Millionaire. I have no idea what this is. I've never heard of Mackey's in my life. I believe PvP was up for this, Penny Arcade was up for this, and a couple others, and I have never, ever heard of that in my life.
Yeah, I guess I have not either, so I guess that we are really not qualified to talk about this.
Yeah. Oh, actually, no, excuse me. The PvP and stuff like that were actually for Best Online Comics Work, and that was actually, the winner of that was American Elf by James Kolchaka, another one that I haven't read, but I've heard of. So,
well, actually, Scott Kurtz's PvP won that same category in the Eisners for this year.
I'm actually kind of glad he didn't win because I didn't want him to stand.
Oh, come now.
No, I'm sorry, dude. I gotta say this straight out here. I mean, no disrespect to him whatsoever, but we were sitting directly behind him the entire time, and the man is large.
He's a big guy. That's true.
Yeah,
but I do all everything else aside, I do enjoy his strip. It's one of the few strips I actually read occasionally. Every once in a, you know, every couple of days, I usually go catch up with what's going on. So yeah, I'm perfectly fine with that winning now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Other stuff, like, I know that people go nuts over Penny Arcade, but to me that strip just really hits a niche, and it does not get beyond that niche. Like, it makes no sense to anyone that's not a huge video game nerd.
Okay, yeah, I can see what you're talking about there. And, I mean, mind you, I love it because I am a video game nerd. But,
well, I am too. I mean, I get it. I get what they're trying to say most of the time. So, but I realize that the vast majority of people out there probably don't know what they're talking about.
Here's a category that you might like: Best American Edition of Foreign Material, Buddha, published by Vertical Books.
Otomos, okay, his Buddha stuff. Yeah, he won the last 2 years actually for the same thing. It's kind of, that book has gotten a lot of good press. I have not read it.
Okay.
Myself, I've read a lot of his other stuff, like Astro Boy stuff and a lot of that Adolf series that came out back about 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, I don't know. What else do you have? Any, because you and I are both kind of manga nerds, so what do you have anything else that you'd rather put out there for this year?
Honestly, I would have liked to see Death Note get some love. I mean, I mean, it wasn't on the ballot, so I'm assuming that they probably went for something that's a bit more, I guess, high class would probably be the best word for it.
Because That was my thought.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, I mean, the best manga that I have read in the last year is Death Note. And I would have definitely loved to see it get some love, but I can understand why they went with something with Buddha.
Well, Eisner's 2004-2005 Buddha won, but in 2006, the award went to something called The Rabbi's Cat.
Oy vey.
By Joanne Spahr, and I have no idea. And I'm saying that totally wrong, because this is actually a man. Named, which is spelled like the American Joan. I guess this is like, he's French. So that explains
okay.
it.
Okay. Best new series, Young Avengers.
You know, we were joking about this before we started, but it's like, God, did that only come out in 2005? I swear that's been out since 2004. It just seems like it's taken forever. You know, I like that series. I think the first six issues is just like dynamite.
Oh, yeah.
The last ones since then have been a little less so for me. I wish they would have gone, stayed with the status quo that they presented in those first few issues before so radically changing it. But, you know, as far as from mainstream books, I don't have too much of a problem with that. We had, on the other side, though, I think the Eisners had a better pick for Best New Series, and they chose the Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely All-Star Superman.
Good.
For 2006. And I definitely think of the two, that's the one that I enjoy more.
I would certainly agree with that. And mind you, I love Young Avengers, but nothing captures the Silver Age feel of Superman while still making it feel modern better than Morrison and Quitely, because it's so cinematic and it really brings the fun back in Superman.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, this is... I'm not a huge, huge Morrison fan like some out there, but I think that he really is getting to the core of the character and making him kind of mysterious and interesting and still vulnerable, but still heroic. And I think it's a great series. So both of those, pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Let's go with the one that I definitely 100% agree with, and that, of course, is... Actually, there's two that I really agree with that I'm probably going to mention here. Best writer, Ed Brubaker. There's hands down. Hands down for me, because he has done such lights-out work over the past year that there's really nobody else you can give it to.
Well, let's see. The Eisner Committee decided to give it to Alan Moore, actually.
That's a cop-out.
Yeah, so I don't know. Obviously, Brubaker is... He's the new It guy at Marvel. Yeah. He's the, he's this year's Bendis, I guess. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. What has Alan Moore done this past year?
Well, it looks like he got the award for the graphic novel Top 10, The 49ers, I think.
Okay.
And also
okay.
is credited with Promethea. So I don't know what what Promethea came out in 2005, but those are the two things they list after his name. Obviously, everyone's really enjoyed the sort of Captain America Renaissance.
Yeah,
I guess it's come out, and a lot of people are on board with his last few issues of Daredevil.
Oh, no question.
I don't know. I'm not feeling the same amount of love for his Uncanny run, but I don't know. Maybe you have a different opinion.
You know what? It's been hit or miss with me, actually. I'd say 1.5 out of the last three issues I've enjoyed, if that makes any sense, because there just seems to be... He's still trying to find his feel, let's put it that way, and he's relying too much on Deadly Genesis right now, and that's not something you should probably do with a ongoing series, because the first one was a limited series, so... Referring back to a limited series as often as he has so far might not be the best way to win over people.
Eh, what the hell?
we've also got the other one that I don't disagree with at all. Best cover artist, James, I believe it's James Jean for Fables.
Okay, yeah. I have not read more than the first trade of Fables myself.
Okay.
But the Eisner voters also voted Gene the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, he got it this year. He got it last year. He got it the year before.
Yeah.
So he's got this kind of locked down. Apparently,
he's outstanding. I mean, honestly, nothing feels quite like the covers to Fables, because it gives it that old timey feel. It gives it that very much Fable touch. Even if it looks a bit more modern on the inside and the outside, that is the sort of, like Mother Goose tales that you grew up on. With this also, let's see here, there was one other one that I here we go. Best continuing or limited series, Runaways for Marvel Comics. I love Runaways. I don't know if I would have given it to Runaways.
You know what, that's, again, that was, that's my kind of bone of contention, and I've been somebody that's just never understood the appeal of that book.
Okay.
I gave it a shot. I read the first trade.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know, I was like, man, well, this is kind of okay, but I don't know. But it's definitely got a severe fan following. Well, maybe, I don't know if we want to get into this right now, we can bring it up later, as far as our Runaways news, but...
Well, why not? I mean, we might as well bring it up now since Runaways and Runaways sort of do go together. But, well, yeah, the big news is that Joss Whedon is going to be taking over Runaways with Michael Ryan. And, I mean, honestly, I think that if you're going to have somebody take over for BKV, it's got to be Joss Whedon because they have very similar styles. But how often is he going to be able to actually put out this book? That's the question.
Yeah, I hope that, you know, he apparently from what I've read online, he and Vaughn are buddies and talk all the time. And when Vaughn said he was stepping down, Whedon asked for the job. So if he's, you know, he claims that this is a series that he just loves. So hopefully, you know, if he can work that same Buffy magic or something on this book, I might give it another look. Coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, I'll tie this back into the... 2006 Eisner Award for the same category went to The Astonishing X-Men.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I guess that does sort of make sense, but...
does that really qualify as a continuing series? I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, for the three issues that came out last year, I guess they did a good job. I don't know. I mean, for a book that's perennially late when it's supposed to be bi-monthly in the first place, yeah, Joss better get out these issues of Runaways or I'm going to be royally pissed. Because I'm a huge fan of it. It's been on time every time. And like I said, they might be pairing him off with Michael Ryan because he's a bit of a lesser-known artist who might be able to put those issues out pretty fast and sort of, you know, poke Joss in the side to get things going. But to give it to Astonishing X-Men, I'd actually rather it go to Runaways.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen until 2007.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe they said their first issue is going to be 24.
Okay.
They're going to take a month off after Vaughn and his artist leave and then come back with the new issue. So we'll just have to keep checking that and see how that comes out. Now, any of these other, you know, obviously I don't think we want to run through every one of these categories because I think I can hear people snoring in the background.
Exactly, yeah. But there was just one other one that I wanted to mention, actually. Best Anthology Solo for DC Comics. Which I would actually, I mean, I haven't read Solo, but I've heard great things about it, so I can understand why they probably went with that.
Yeah, Solo also won the best anthology from the Eisner Committee as well. It's for me, Solo's really hit or miss, because each issue, if you don't know, each issue is dedicated to one creator, and it's just a lot of different stories by that same one creator. So you have, you know, you have the Paul Pope issue, you have the Darwin Cook issue, you have... the Madman Ecstatics Mormon guy issue. What's that guy's name again? Michael Allred issue. And there's some good stuff that's coming out of there. I mean, they're really interesting. A lot of these books, they do have still a superhero or two story tied in occasionally. And some of them are really funny. Some of them are serious. But, you know, the Mike Allred issue, I swear to God, is like one of the best comic things I've read in a year.
Allred's the man.
It's, I mean, he just has this pure, ridiculous... Silver Age kind of sentimentality going through that book. He wanted it to, originally it was going to have a cover of Adam West Batman doing the Batusi.
Oh my God.
But DC nixed it. They said no, he couldn't put that out because it didn't go against, you know, it went against their image or something that they didn't want that.
But it's the Batusi, man.
Well, they went to they changed it so it was Wonder Girl doing the Batusi, actually.
Oh, okay.
Which isn't quite the same, but you know, he has this awesome Silver Age Teen Titans story in that book that is it's great. So if you haven't ever picked that up, I mean, again, it depends on the creator. Each issue has its own pluses and minuses, but that's a solid one for sure. I'd definitely recommend that one.
Is it traded or
I don't think so.
Okay.
I really don't know that much how successful those issues are or how well they're doing. I feel like I keep hearing buzz about how the fact that it's not that successful
I mean you had Gaiman do an issue, so I mean I'm sure it has to have at least sold a little bit.
Yeah, you know, again, it depends on the issue. I guess it depends on the artist and the creator involved. But definitely keep an eye out for it if you're looking for something a little bit different than the norm.
Alrighty, well, that works. And I mean, just to give a final capper on Baltimore Comic Con, like I said, it's a smaller con than what I'm used to, but it was certainly fun to be at. And I mean, the Harveys were kind of interesting because actually, right after the Harveys, they gave out these free tumblers to anybody who actually bought the dinner. So you had an option. If you bought a 2-day pass, you were given a free ticket to the Harveys, or you could pay $50 and eat dinner and be there with the stars and all that. Yeah, to say the least, we got the free ticket. And we sat on the side, and actually, after everybody left, there were 2 untouched tiramisu desserts just sitting there.
Oh, my
and
God.
we went over, my girlfriend and I just looked at each other and like nodded our heads and be like, well, nobody's going to miss this. We had ourselves some tiramisu. We took 3 tumblers that were just sitting on the table that nobody took. And
dude, I'm having like these visions of George Costanza eating the eclair out of the garbage can.
Hey, dude, this was untouched and just sitting there, all right? No bites taken out of it or nothing. I mean, there is no way I was going to let good tiramisu go to waste.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, and I mean, that was actually real. You know, it was a fun time. I actually met a couple of people that actually will hopefully be listening to this episode of Comic Timing, as they said they would, so hopefully they are. And, you know, good times had by all at Baltimore Comic Con. And the day after Baltimore Comic Con, to go with the idea of the announcements, a lot of announcements were made by Marvel at this Diamond event that happened in Baltimore. And, well, we already mentioned one of them with Runaways. Let's go to some of the other ones quickly here. Nova gets an ongoing series. Now, I know you were a fan of Annihilation number 1. Are you actually going to read an entire series about Nova? That's the question.
Eh. No, that's my one syllable utterance review.
Okay.
No, I don't know. I mean, I thought Annihilation was okay. I don't know what they're going to do with it. I want to see how Annihilation wraps up and see where they go. Nova's one of those characters that just, you know, Marvel has these certain characters that are kind of cool, and they keep trying to give them solo books, and they just flop. Like, I think he's one of those kind of characters. Somebody like Moon Knight, and I hate to say this for the people that are enjoying the current series, but Moon Knight's one of those characters, too, I think, that just, he's cool in principle, but not in, like, practice a lot of times.
I stick by our comment, okay? In the Civil War issue, does it mean he's actually going to leave his house?
We can only hope. But,
yeah.
But all right, next.
Next, we've got Sean McKeever, who's actually one of my favorite writers, so I'm glad to see him on something. He's going to be doing the Spider-Man Family, which is apparently going to be sort of an anthology book about the people associated with Spider-Man, and this means that it could go anywhere from, you know, Aunt May to Spider-Man 2099. So,
what's that? I'm getting a call. Ian, hold on a second.
Okay.
DC's lawyers are calling us about that family name being.
Snap.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, look, you know what? I guess Spider-Man does have a large amount of people around him. Mind you, I haven't seen Betty Brand in anything in years, so I've actually been waiting to see where the hell she's been.
Well, where's Glory Grant? Where's she been?
There you go. Glory Grant, Betty Brandt, all these folks have sort of disappeared off the face of the earth except for Flash Thompson, who's a regular in Peter David's Friendly Neighborhood. But I don't know. Maybe this will be a way to actually check in on the rest of the Spider-Man universe every now and then.
All right, next.
Next, we got The Loners, which is a C.B. Cebulski book, which actually means it might actually be good, because, well, C.B. Cebulski has written some good things in the past. He wrote one of my favorite issues of Spider-Man Unlimited, which with David Finch art very recently, actually, and I'm liking his stuff that he's done so far on this X-Men Fairy Tales thing he's been doing. So hopefully The Loners will turn out to be good. And he's working in conjunction with BKV, because these are all characters that appeared in a arc of Runaways a couple issues back.
Yes, this is for those people who cannot get enough Runaways. Here is another Runaways series. These characters, again, he brought them kind of out of obscurity, but the group is made up of basically a bunch of, again, sort of, well, loserish sort of Marvel characters from the decade gone by. Like, there's the one girl that's out of Power Pack, and that guy with no chin that was in that Generation X, is he still in there? Oh, he lost.
No, he was. He yeah.
House
he was
of M.
In it,
okay.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. He was in it, but actually, it turned out to be. And this is only a half spoiler here, because if anybody who read Runaways would get this, but it wasn't actually Chamber. It was one of the characters who's supposed to be the villains of the Runaways, actually pretending to be Chamber.
Oh, dude, you're blowing my mind. I don't even want to know that kind of stuff. All right.
Exactly.
And there's also Darkhawk, I think, on that team, and some other.
Darkhawk's on it. The guy who was in the Green Goblin suit back when Green Goblin was good, Phil Urich, who's actually, I believe he's Ben Urich's nephew or something along those lines.
Oh, something like that.
Yeah, and don't even get me started on the Power Pack continuity issues, because, well, it's like there's one Power Pack that's running around that's all young, and yet magically this one member of Power Pack is a teenager. Hello?
Oh, good lord. All right, next.
Exactly. Next, we've got your favorite, J. Michael Straczynski's run on Thor. Now, apparently, this is going to be Thor in good old Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plains. You know what? This is, to me, J. Michael Straczynski has really smoked some crack before, in my mind. You know, the whole Spider-Man is a Spider-Totem God thing, the other, you know, his FF stuff, and some other things. He is now his idea, and I don't know if this is tongue-in-cheek or not, but what he's saying is that he wants to go back to basically the Kirby kind of style Thor with Don Blake as his alter ego. He wants to, you know, he sort of made some kind of backhanded criticisms of the Simonson run.
Okay.
Where he was saying something like, you know, oh, well, you know, yeah, being a frog, that was cool, but, you know, it's kind of silly afterwards, and some other things like that. So I don't know what he's going to do with the series. The only thing I do know is that he said he was going to set Asgard 8 feet off the ground in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And the Asgardians and the Oklahomans were supposedly going to interact with each other as wonderful, friendly neighbors.
Well, this has been done before in Dan Jurgens' run, where the entire Asgard was on top of New York City, and they sort of had like a whole Thor cult going on, which was sort of like a new religion. But obviously that was New York, and well, now you're going to have Oklahoma. I mean, what the hell is he trying to do here?
Well, he claims, I don't know if this is serious or what, he claims in his comments in Newsarama that he feels that the Midwest is not getting any love from comics, and so that was his intention.
Great Lakes Avengers, man, come on.
As someone who lives in the Midwest in Wisconsin, I don't know if I've ever considered Oklahoma to be part of the Midwest, but what the hell, I guess it's in the middle. You know, it's between the East and West Coast, so I guess it does count, sort of.
Sort of, kind of, maybe.
That book has the potential of being just horribly ridiculous, or if he can somehow make this work, I will eat my plastic replica of Mjolnir.
Oh my god, wow, I am actually going to be holding you to that, actually.
Well,
if it doesn't happen, I'm bringing the ketchup.
Keep in mind, this is only the little Marvel Legends version figure size hammer, but...
Okay. All right. Alan Davis extends his exclusive and will be returning clandestine to Marvel Comics.
Next.
Now, exactly. Well, I'm an Alan Davis fan, all right? So I'm sort of glad to see him back. And as I mentioned before, I do sort of want to read a bit of his early Excalibur. So, I mean, this could turn out to be pretty good. But when he said that... By the way, Joe Quesada, when he first brought all this up, did a whole Jeopardy thing that sort of made very little sense. I think Joe Quesada was just tired and decided, hey, I'm going to do something silly. And it to me, it was kind of annoying because I had to wait an extra 6 hours to find out all this information.
Question, who's the hottest creative team? Yeah, that was really, really annoying.
Yeah.
I want to run through these pretty fast, but you know what?
Yeah.
Alan Davis, good artist, classic artist. I don't have any problem with him producing material. Clandestine, never really liked it when it was out originally, so bringing that back really doesn't do anything for me. But again, you know, I guess I'll check out the first issue anyway. We'll see.
Okay, how about this? Classic novels being converted into Marvel Comics, which is actually something that's sort of brand new. I mean, they're going to be apparently a whole bunch of different classic novels here, including Last of the Mohegans are going to be adapted. Last of the Mohegans is being adapted by Roy Thomas, and there's a couple other ones that are going to be there. I mean, this could turn out to either be a really great idea or really stupid.
Well, I got to tell you, in all honesty, as a high school English teacher, I use these comic versions of stories occasionally. So if they are of good quality, I will be glad to buy some of those if they fit into what I do with my class. I've been using occasionally these older ones that Acclaim used to reprint.
Yeah.
About, I don't know, in the 90s or something, these little ones, Classics Illustrated or whatever they're called. I've used some of those at times. So, hey, what the hell? If it looks good, if it's true to the story, I will be glad to buy some.
Here's one that we can pretty much say next on immediately. Guiding Light meets Mighty Avengers.
You know what? Worst crossover ever. I don't know.
Worse than the SNL issue with Spider-Man, I think it was.
Oh, God. That one and the David Letterman one combined are millions of times better than this. When David Letterman, like, KOs the villain with a giant doorknob. That... No, this is, you know, again, apparently, whatever kind of weird juju they have going on here, apparently the costume designer of Guiding Light designed the Storm wedding dress or something.
Yeah.
And so now they're having some weird interconnectivity between some kind of comic storyline going on in the soap. And, hell, I guess, you know, comics are soap operas. I don't know that, you know, these housewives who are watching them are going to go out and buy Marvel Comics, but, you know, what the hell? They're trying something new, I guess, and we'll give them some credit for that, at least.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, this will sell to about, you know, three housewives and maybe a dog.
Remember, there are a lot of unemployed losers that watch daytime soap, so...
That's true. Luckily, I might be an unemployed loser, but thank God I don't watch daytime soap, so that's what matters. And one more little piece of news. News here. Spider-Man's going back to an old costume, but it's not the red and blue. It is
the Fantastic Four suit with the paper bag over his head.
Surprisingly not, actually. It's the black costume, which, you know, it's not like they're coming out with a movie where he's going to be in that or anything, so there's no reason to really put him in that.
Well, according to Joe Q, that was purely coincidental. But,
right,
I don't know
sure.
how much I'll believe that. You know what? That's kind of interesting, I guess. Obviously, I've been on record many times as saying that I think the current Spider-Man costume is the worst costume I've ever seen on a character.
Wow.
Quite frankly.
even worse than the Invisible Woman's Fantastic Four outfit with the little cutout for her breasts?
Well, at least we got to see cleavage with that. I mean, what
the hell?
What are we getting out of this? You know, he's a spider with seven arms. I mean, what the hell? How does that make sense?
Oh, man, good question.
But, you know, when I was in my heyday of collecting in the 80s, you know, I was right on board right after Secret Wars, right with the whole black suit thing. So, you know, I like it. I think I'm at a point where I still just would rather see the original costume. But, you know, I have no problem with the black suit. Now, the only thing, again, Joe was trying to be all cryptic and, like, freaky and stuff when he was talking about this suit.
Yeah, about how it might not be Spider-Man costume, and there might be two Spider-Mans coming around.
Maybe it's Iron Fist. I don't know who the hell it is.
It could be Ben Reilly.
Well, I guess it could, you know... I guess anything's game. But yeah, he basically danced around the idea that, well, it might not be Peter Parker, Spider-Man, blah, blah, blah. You know, whatever. We've already done that with Daredevil. You know, we've seen this happen already this past year. So I don't know if I really want to go into that. But I guess that's one way they can bullshit their way out of the whole Spider-Man reveals his identity thing.
I guess, yeah. Actually, it's Bucky in the costume.
Oh, man. How many... It's just, you know, we're saying this stuff right now, but, like, you know, this is kind of funny that all these characters have popped up in the last year or two.
Yeah, well, and also this is sort of a trend now because, well, Wolverine's back in his brown tans in Wolverine Origins, and now Spider-Man's going back to his you know, black and white. So who knows, maybe Captain America will be back in the Nomad outfit soon. Who knows?
Man, I'm telling you, I don't know. I'm at a point in my life, I guess, where a costume change does not denote a reason for me to buy a book.
Yeah.
So, depending on what they're going to do with this, what I want to see in 2007 from Spider-Man is, I want to see a return to relevance.
Yeah.
With that character. He's at a point where he's so far away from what he started as, and he's so far away from the core of what makes Spider-Man the everyman hero He's got to get, you know, he's got to quit the Avengers. He's got to get out of all this stuff. He's got to go back to being a solo hero. He's got to stop living in a mansion.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to have some problems in his life to deal with. And, you know, if the story's good, I will check it out. But again, like I said, the costume is not enough to get me to start buying it.
Well, you talk about lateness also. It looks like Joe Quesada is doing a miniseries with JMS, and God only knows how late that's going to be. I mean, we're still waiting on Daredevil Father number 6 or whatever the hell it is, but I don't think anybody's really waiting on that one more as if it's just going to come out, because I stopped caring about that about 2 years ago. one final thing, actually, before we wrap things up. World War Hulk is going to be the 2007 Marvel Big Summer Blockbuster event. And they put the blockbuster in there because everything's a summer blockbuster these days.
Exactly. And that one, you know, Hulk finds himself transported through time, and he has to fight against the Nazis.
Oh, awesome. That'd be great. And
it is going to be a kick-ass series.
It's going to be fantastic. But well, this is obviously going to be the ramifications of Planet Hulk. You know, Hulk comes back down and goes over to Iron Man and said, Hulk sees you angry with Captain America. Hulk want to kill you both to make resolution.
I don't know if he's even talking like that anymore. Are you reading the Planet Hulk series?
I've picked up a couple issues here and there. I mean, some people have praised it. I honestly couldn't really get into it too much. But
well, I haven't read it. I'm looking to try to see when the first trade comes out, because I don't think it's out yet. But
yeah,
maybe I want to check it out because it is getting a lot of buzz from people. But the thing is with me, and you know, a lot of people are really excited about this event next year because, you know, we all know that the secret cabal of the Illuminati guys in Marvel basically screwed Hulk and sent him in outer space.
Yeah.
To get rid of him, and he's obviously going to be pissed off, and he's going to get revenge on this, otherwise we wouldn't really have a world war to worry about. The weird thing is, like, I mean, the thing about this planet, the Planet Hulk and this World War Hulk storyline is the simple fact that, again, it's so different. Like, there's no Bruce Banner anymore. The information that I read from the writer that was kind of hinting at what was going to happen, you know, he was saying some things that, while they seemed like they were going to make for a kick-ass story, mm-hmm. they were kind of far away from what we've expected with that character. And I guess, again, if it's selling, if people are excited by the book, then that's better than a stale old, you know, Hulk smash kind of book. But let me just pull that up here, what Greg Pak hinted at. Now, the one main reason why I might buy that World War Hulk series is because it is going to have John Romita Jr. art.
Exactly the reason why I'm probably going to be picking it up myself. I've liked some Greg Pak stuff in the past. I actually really liked Phoenix End Song, and now actually the first issue of Phoenix War Song has actually been really good. So, I mean, the guy can write. I'm just not quite sold on Planet Hulk. Maybe I'll like World War Hulk better.
All right, this is like just some quotes from this interview before we wrap it up. He says, some might argue that Hulk's true home is the savage planet of Sakaar. I would never argue that. Obviously, he apparently is a successful gladiator and has all these followers and everybody loves him and everything. So, yeah, I guess there wouldn't really be a point of coming back to Earth where everyone hates you.
Yeah.
And then this is the quote that really kind of gets me a little bit as far as what's going to happen. He says, then again, maybe the Hulk isn't a hero. Maybe deep down he's a monster, and once he finishes destroying Sakaar, he won't stop until he's crushed each and every one of these stupid puny humans who sent him there in the first place.
Ooh.
So that's the take on the character, where there is no Bruce Banner, there is no human side to this person anymore. And, you know, again, if it's successful, if it kicks ass, it's got John Romita Jr. artwork, you know, I am already interested in seeing where it goes. So I guess we'll just have to wait till next summer.
Well, I still think that they dropped the ball here. I mean, sure, Planet Hulk might be really cool, but I would have loved to see Hulk being a part of Civil War and have Banner be on one side and Hulk be on the other. You know, and just sort of have sort of the pull between the sides there. But who knows, maybe we'll get a little bit out of that in World War Hulk. We never know.
Yeah, you know, that's the one thing. You know, obviously the Hulk is very influenced by the classic Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde stories.
Yeah.
And we're kind of at a point where we've been for a while where there is no Dr. Jekyll anymore. It's just the monster, it's just Hulk, and there is no Bruce Banner. I guess Bruce Banner is sort of boring. You know, why would you want to write a story about a boring nerd scientist when you could write a story about a green guy that can punch a mountain? I can appreciate that. I'd like to see more of a return to something to do with his human side.
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll get that out of this. I mean, you never know. It could. I mean, it's still brewing inside there somewhere. I mean, there's no way in hell he's entirely gone because, well, Bruce is still a part of the Hulk, no matter, you know, how deep inside it is. Just like for a while there when I believe it was Bruce Jones was writing him, Banner was there more than the Hulk. Well, now it's just tables have turned and Hulk's there more than Banner. You never know. But, yeah, no, I think we did a good job of actually going through the, you know, the whole Baltimore thing and the ramifications of it as you were with Joe Q's little game of Jeopardy here.
Yeah, there was a lot of things to say, and, you know, Marvel's riding high right now. DC pretty much kind of stole the limelight during the run-up to Infinite Crisis, and I think Marvel's kind of taking it back again. So we'll see what happens. We're going back and forth constantly. The one thing about this Planet Hulk or World War Hulk thing, I guess, that's coming out next year, this is supposed to be their big event, and Quesada claims that it's not going to be like Civil War. It's not going to tie into a bunch of other books. It's going to be pretty standalone as far as what his comments are, and we'll see if that holds true or not.
Hey, Annihilation's been that so far, so they can certainly do it, although, like you said, let's see if that actually does happen.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Exactly. Tune in for episode 45 and find out.
Yes, yeah. we find out who the killer is. Anyway, so, let's wrap things up here. First of all, Matt, a pleasure as always.
And you as well.
Yes, and we actually carried a show with just the two of us for the first time. So how about that?
Well, I think that's a sign that we don't need any of these other losers on the show.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Nah, in all seriousness, though, we'll be probably back to the three next week. It's just a nice casual episode here to sort of wrap up Baltimore and the like. But nevertheless, let's go through the usual rundown here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. Don't forget to vote for us over at Podcast Alley. There is a new listing for us on Podcast Alley because I was actually getting anxious because I still hadn't heard back from the Podcast Alley guys on changing the feed to actually have it be updated. So the new feed on Podcast Alley, I changed all the posts on the website. So every single one of them has the proper Podcast Alley link. This one will have the proper one as well. The link on our website is the right link. And it's the one listed on Podcast Alley that says, note, this is the proper feed. So it's kind of hard to get the wrong one there. But please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We're listed on iTunes. And don't forget to give us your iTunes reviews. iTunes 7 has just been released, so hopefully iTunes 7 will work right. That's going to find that out.
You know what, Ian? As long as we're talking about iTunes, I just want to say that I spent my evening yesterday basically just having a nerdgasm because I followed the Apple announcements yesterday and saw all the new things and the new 5.5 generation video iPod, and ooh, I felt kind of bad and sad because my regular video iPod was sad and lonely and sorry now.
Aww.
But I got a firmware update, got iTunes 7, it's pretty cool. A lot of cool new features on there. Now I'm playing Tetris and Bejeweled and a bunch of other crazy games on my iPod now.
Nice.
Pretty slick. So check that out, definitely. And yeah, leave some reviews and some feedback wherever you may want to leave it.
Exactly. And hey, guys, don't forget, we have an email address, guys. I mean, send us some emails over at comictiming@gmail.com or even some audio comments.
Tell me what an asshole I am.
Right, man.
Tell us how hot Ian's girlfriend is, whatever.
Oh, my God, man. Jeez. I haven't... let's not even get into that, all right?
We got to get the fanboys motivated somehow.
Oh, my lordy. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com, and our 22 pages number 2 is going to be Superman Confidential number 1, which will be released in November, and it's available right now on DCBS for a measly 75 cents. If you want to add that to your order, you can go ahead and do so. Once again, Matt, you're jovial as always, and thank you for joining us.
You know, Ian, that's funny you say jovial, because that is one of the vocabulary words in my class this week.
Oh, great.
That aside.
Well, then I'm glad you're being jovial, 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 jovial.
All right, man. I have got to go to sleep now. I'm burning the candle at both ends, so.
Yes. Well, as always, there's always time for comics. And we're out. Thanks for staying up for this, man.
Man, I think we sound like we're crazy or something on this.
We always sound like we're crazy. Come on, man. That seems to be the appeal. I mean, I don't know. I mean, for some reason, people seem to dig the whole "we're out of our fucking minds" thing, so.
Yeah, that might be our unique niche that we can go for.
Yeah, right.
We're batshit crazy. Come on in.
Woo!